Testing in the House Chamber, Legislative Day 139.
The House will come to order. Members will take their seats. Visitors will retire from the chamber. The sergeant-at-arms will close the doors. Members and guests are asked to please silence all electronic devices. And by the way, before we get too far along, the House will be taking a recess shortly after we open up and handle some administrative matters. This morning's prayer will be offered by Representative Dixon. We ask our members and our guests in the gallery to please stand for the prayer and to remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance thereafter. Representative Dixon.
Our kind Father in heaven, we assemble here this morning to conduct the business of the state. We come to thee first in prayer, as humble as we can position ourselves to express to thee, Heavenly Father, our thankfulness for the many, many blessings that we often take for granted. We're so thankful that we have sufficient freedom and the liberty to exercise that freedom, to come together as this General Assembly in the House and attempt to serve the people of North Carolina. Heavenly Father, we are sometimes saddened with the challenges that various members of this caucus go through. This morning we think of Representative Dana Baumgardner's family. And to the best of our ability, we ask thee, Father, to bring them peace from the Prince of Peace, that they might be comforted as they go through the temporary loss of husband, father, grandfather. We think of the loss that Representative Cunningham had a week or so ago. We all come here with strengths and weaknesses. We come here with challenges in our family, in our associations. Heavenly Father, we profess that we need thy help, that we need thy guidance. We commit, Heavenly Father, that if thou will be kind enough to buoy us up in facing the challenges of this world, that we will heed thy counsel and that we will turn to thee and thy Son in an attempt to be better at loving one another. This we pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, is recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, the journal for October 6th has been examined and found to be correct. I move that it be approved as written.
Representative Hall moves the journal for October 6th be approved as written. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The journal is approved as written. Members, you will notice a number of our Democratic colleagues are not on the floor. They are still in caucus, and the minority leader did consult with the chair, and I did advise Representative Reeves that we would not move into any recorded votes at least until 11:45, so members can know that for their planning purposes so far this morning. But we do have a number of administrative matters that we're going to proceed to dispose of at this time. First of which, ratification of bills and resolutions. The clerk will read.
Your Honor, the clerk will post the following bills duly ratified for presentation to the governor. Senate Bill 85, an act to allow vision service plans to make technical and conforming changes to Chapter 58 of the General Statutes. Senate Bill 191, an act providing patient visitation rights will not be impacted during declared disasters and emergencies, and direct the Department of Health and Human Services to impose a civil penalty for any violation of those rights. Senate Bill 695, an act to make various changes to laws affecting principal licenses, salary installments, reporting requirements, and cash management requirements for public school units.
Chapter bills will be noted.
I don't want to change it, except we can use some tweaks, but to make it more, but it's never going to become law, so what's the point of the tweaks?
Yeah.
It's never going to become law, so there's no point in making it more technically accurate.
Mr. Clerk, members, chair is going to direct that House Bill 259, that's the Election Integrity Act, be removed from today's calendar and be calendared for next Tuesday. Chair will announce this once the body's fully back in, but the plan is for the next day of recorded votes for the House to be next Tuesday. Representative Bradford, would the gentleman approach the dais, please? The House is going to stand at ease. The House will come back to order. The gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Bradford, is recognized to send forth a representative statement. The chair directs that upon the adjournment of the House, that that representative statement will be read its entirety and spread across the journal. The House will come to order. Then the gentleman has the floor to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this Saturday, October the 9th, is PANS and PANDAS Awareness Day. You may be asking yourself, what is PANS or PANDAS? Well, in October 2018, my wife and I had never heard of it until we were faced searching for answers related to a very serious medical matter that seemed to develop almost overnight in one of our children, Sophie Bradford. PANS is a pediatric acute onset neuropsychiatric syndrome, and PANDAS is a pediatric autoimmune neuropsychiatric disorder that's associated with strep throat, often strep B. In our experience, our then 11-year-old daughter Sophie had changed into someone completely different in a matter of days. Sophie experienced abrupt and sudden dramatic onset of obsessive compulsive disorder, restricted eating and weight loss, deterioration of learning, fits of uncontrollable rage, severe anxiety, and other neuropsychiatric symptoms. PANS and PANDAS is often misdiagnosed as severe attention and or anxiety disorders or mental health issues and others. This misunderstood diagnosis is often due to the lack of awareness within the medical community about these disorders. My wife, Shay, would not settle for the answers we were receiving from our doctors because as a mother, she knew that there was an underlying issue that had not yet been identified with Sophie. My wife only learned about PANS and PANDAS because she was standing in the waiting room of a pediatric psychiatrist while my daughter was receiving help or treatment, and another mother in the same lobby started talking about her son and PANS and PANDAS. And my wife pulled the mother aside and started to ask more, and that's when we were first introduced to PANS and PANDAS. We pressed our doctors for more testing after learning about PANS and PANDAS, and our doctors ordered a full round of blood work on our daughter. The blood work eventually surfaced that my daughter had an undiscovered Lyme disease as well as mold toxicity. And we would have never have known this had we not pressed our doctors. So once we now knew that she had been diagnosed with PANS because of the undiscovered Lyme disease and the mold toxicity, we learned about her what the treatment options were. And ladies and gentlemen, the treatment options was a $5 to $10 round of antibiotics. So in a couple of weeks after my daughter, who we had been searching for months for answers, hospital visits, etc., $5 to $10 rounds of antibiotics got my daughter back onto a road of amazing recovery. So it's now been over 3 years since we dealt with the initial trauma, and it was truly trauma. I would never wish this on any family, with Sophie's medical issues. My Sophie Soph is back to a fun-loving, horseback-riding, 14-year-old teenage girl. Yes, she will have a lifetime issue of managing her Lyme disease, but at least we know its existence and how to manage it best possible. Families across North Carolina, like the families of Katie Conlin and Charlotte, and Jackson Hauser and Cornelius, have dealt with, and in some cases continue to deal with, PANS and PANDAS. Many families go years undiagnosed and or misdiagnosed because their medical provider simply may not be aware of PANS and PANDAS. There is no doubt that early detection and antibiotic treatment can save families a lot of stress, turmoil, and even hundreds of thousands of dollars of medical expenses that health insurance plans in North Carolina will not cover. There has been a published consensus paper from Stanford University, a 66-page published paper from the National Institute of Health, and over 45 states either having university-based treatment clinics or health and human services and council-based treatment recommendations, most of which North Carolina healthcare providers remain unaware. Early National Institute of Health data shows that 1 in 200 children in North Carolina may have PANS or PANDAS. And Stanford shows data 1 in 50. This is why bringing awareness to PANS and PANDAS, not only in North Carolina, but across the world, is incredibly important. A $5 to $10 round of generic antibiotics with early diagnosis can change the trajectory in such a positive ways for children and young adults across our world. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative Bradford. For what purpose does the gentleman from Durham, Representative Hawkins, rise?
Point of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, and I need to ask a question of Representative Moffitt, but I'll start with the point of personal privilege. This morning, I understand that there was a press conference that included and mentioned Durham County and our elections. While I understand, I mean, we're a pretty cool county. We really are, probably the coolest. And we take our elections very seriously, and we ensure that we do elections right. The people in Durham go toe-to-toe with you over a stoplight because they care about democracy, and the people on our boards of elections are some of the best and brightest in the country. So I want to make sure that I'm clear, and I think I've shared this with the members of the Freedom Caucus. You are not welcome in Durham County, and not sure if you want to step foot in Durham County and try to inspect the machine. You will not be greeted as liberators. Let me be clear. So, again, the people of Durham County take their elections very seriously. And to call into integrity on the people, the hardworking staff of our Board of Elections is a slap. And I'm here to make sure that you know that you are not welcome in Durham County, and if you try, it may not work out for you well. Mr. Speaker, may I ask Representative Moffitt a question?
Representative Moffitt, does the gentleman yield to a question from Representative Hawkins?
I yield.
He yields.
This will be the good one. Could you please tell the members of the body and the people of the state of North Carolina why Sunday was so historic in the great state of North Carolina?
Certainly, Representative Hawkins, I appreciate the question. Sunday, October 3rd of this year, was the first time since before Prohibition when you could actually purchase a bottle of distilled spirits legally in our state.
Could you, and yes, please clap.
Sounds like both of you gentlemen might need some of that right now.
That's right. That's right, Mr. Speaker. It's plenty enough to go around, and I'm glad to provide for all members of the North Carolina House Bourbon Caucus meeting after this. But, Mr. Representative Moffitt, could you share some of that the members also took part in that historic nature that you and I were among the first to purchase on a Sunday in North Carolina?
As if I understand your question correctly, there were a number of events statewide to celebrate this particular event, and I was glad to actually be the first one to purchase a bottle of distilled spirits on Sunday since prior to Prohibition, despite the claims of other folks.
Follow up, Mr. Speaker.
Does the gentleman yield? He yields.
I yield.
You do. Are you sure? Do you have a time stamp to verify that you were the first, because I understand that I was the first in Durham County at Mystic Distillery, and so we both did it at the same time, but I think I time-stamped it first. I just wanted to make sure that you're clear about that.
Representative Hawkins, was it one of those voting machines that did your time stamp in Durham County? I just want to find out.
Well played, Mr. Speaker, well played.
I'm here all day.
All right. Well, thank you. That's the end of my questions. I appreciate it. Thank you for the acknowledgement, and glad that you were second. And you can join me in history.
Well, Mr. Speaker, if I may answer the question that the gentleman...
The gentleman has proper, the floor to respond.
Yeah. Yes, I do have a time stamp. And if your time stamp, if you purchased the bottle before me, I'd like to introduce you to some ALE officers that I'm aware of.
It's amazing how quickly the light went out that time. For what purpose does the gentleman from Iredell, Representative McNeely, rise?
Point of personal privilege.
The gentleman is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Just to reiterate, there was a press conference this morning, and randomly out of 100 counties draw from a hat, Durham did happen to be the county picked. And I would hope that all 100 counties in North Carolina want voter integrity and election integrity. And I would hope that all 100 counties in North Carolina would welcome that to prove that they are exactly what we said, innocent of any wrongdoing and totally pure in their election abilities. So I would hope we would have an open door, and I would hope that any representative from a county chosen would gladly join us to prove that they are what they say they are, and that is a true county of true elections.
I see a number of lights. Look, we're going to get to debate an election integrity bill next Tuesday. I would just ask members probably hold their comments to that. I'm sure you can have time to, we do have some other business we need to take care of today. So I'll come back at the end of session. And if there are lights on, maybe we can have some more points of personal privilege, but we do need to dispose of some actual bills that are on the calendar at this time. House Bill 165, the clerk will read.
Representatives Brandon Jones, Eiler, and Shepherd, House Bill 165, a bill to be entitled an act to make various changes to the transportation and motor vehicle laws of the state. General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
The gentleman from Columbus, Representative Jones, is recognized for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House do not concur on Senate Committee Substitute 165.
The gentleman's moved the House do not concur to the Senate Committee Substitute to House Bill 165, and the gentleman has the floor to debate the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaking to the agencies, there's a few technical corrections and a little bit of language that's non-controversial that needs to be added, so I ask that you non-concur until we can get this straightened out. Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the motion not to concur the Senate Committee Substitute to House Bill 165. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. There were a few members who voted no. Just want to double check and make sure members are intending to do that. This is a motion not to concur. Representative Hawkins, you're the only no vote. Does the gentleman want to stay as a no vote? Representative Willis on the floor. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 110 having voted in the affirmative, none in the negative. The House has voted not to concur. The Senate Committee Substitute to House Bill 165, the Senate will be so notified. Representative Jones, I believe the gentleman advised the chair earlier there are just some truly technical changes. In that case, the chair will just appoint Representative Jones as the sole conferee on that bill at this time. Senate will be notified. House Bill 624, the clerk will read.
Representative Sane, Turner, Lofton, and Zoka, House Bill 624, a bill to be entitled an act to enact the North Carolina Financial and Insurance Regulatory Sandbox Act and to establish the North Carolina Innovation Council. General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Representative Sane, I believe this is the gentleman's bill. The gentleman is recognized for a motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move that we adopt the conference report. The changes that were made were just purely technical in nature. We had a good vote in this body and appreciate your support.
The gentleman has moved that the House do concur with the Senate Committee Substitute to House Bill 624. Further discussion, further debate? Not the question for the House is the adoption of the motion to concur with the Senate Committee Substitute to House Bill 624. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 111 having voted in the affirmative and none in the negative. The House does concur with the Senate Committee Substitute to House Bill 624. And the bill is ordered, enrolled, and sent to the governor. For what purpose does the gentleman from Dublin, Representative Dixon, rise?
Inquire the chair.
The gentleman is recognized.
Mr. Speaker, in relation to the recent points of privileges that we've just participated in, I find nothing strictly out of order with anything that was said, other than I believe that the spirit, at least the spirit, if not the letter of the rule, which gives us the opportunity to give ourselves a point of privilege, indicates that we should avoid controversy or anything like that. And in light of the, and like I say, I have nothing against any of the verbiage or anything that was said about an issue. I just think it's not appropriate under a point of personal privilege to do that.
The way the chair handled that was simply just not going to recognize anymore at that time. And just I understand. It's probably worth pointing out as we get here, and of course we have members of the public here watching, some who may be their first time here watching this. There are often contentious issues that emerge outside this building and outside this floor, and the chair does endeavor to allow members to basically say their piece. We're all elected by the people, but under our rules, we should try to keep comments relevant to what's happening, and so there are things that may get said out in the outside the floor that are political in nature, and so the chair will try to apply that standard fairly to all involved, and frankly just trying to move on with our business of the day, but the gentleman's points well taken. For what purpose, gentleman from Chatham, Representative Reeves rise.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and that is actually to speak in line with what you're saying.
Gentleman's recognized to speak to a point of privilege.
Representative Dixon is, and I appreciate you bringing that up. You and I talk about these issues a lot, and I completely agree with you. The reason that it's interesting that this comes up is because we had this happen last week. And I will just speak, and I try not to speak for an entire group of people because we're very diverse. And if you don't know we're diverse, come in the caucus when there's a bill. So. With that being said, there were comments made last week that I have tried, and those of you that know me, I try to listen to what is said and try to see it from that person's viewpoint. But there were some really, really rough comments made last week about Democrats that made a lot of folks over here upset. And I'm just being fair, and it has been the hardest thing up here. I'm fine when we debate issues. I'm fine that we have differences of opinion. I'm fine when we differ on policy. I'm fine even if we take positions about what we feel on policy based on what our parties are. I know that happens sometimes. But we had a lot of people on this side of the aisle, and I wish everybody was here today to hear this conversation, but since you brought it up, I think this is appropriate. Who, when things happen to folks in the other caucus, reach out, they call, they ask, and that's sincere. Because whatever issues we have on bills, and actually I think we've done a good job, and I will commend the speaker on this, I will commend, you know, Majority Leader Bell, Chairman Hall, and all of our leadership on this side too, of making sure we've stayed cordial. But when we do those things, when you're reaching out to people, when you're expressing concern and that sincere concern, and then you walk in and somebody tells you that because of an action by one person who states they identify as somebody on your side of the aisle that's outside of this building, and then you cast aspersions on an entire group based on that, that is frustrating. And that is frustrating to no end. When I talk to my friends on your side of the aisle, all of you, the one thing that you're all consistent about is don't judge me based on the actions of somebody else. In fact, if I'm fair, a lot of you are like us, say, don't even judge me based on what somebody else in my caucus said. But we can't do that. We can't get to a point where we start making comments that end up in newspapers and end up articles saying that a group of people are bad based on those actions. Because what I would say is, then what you're telling me is that you took the actions of five people and completely ignored the actions of 51. And I don't think that's a fair way to do it. And I will never judge any of you like that. I would ask that none of my caucus do that with folks that are on the other side of the aisle, because we are all in one big fraternity, sorority, group, whatever you want to call it. And we are all here to serve our people back home, but also serve this state. And just understand, when you say things like that, when you challenge people on their character, their integrity, their religion, none of us would ever wish bad things health-wise on anybody else in this building. We're just not built like that. And we all know that. So please don't get on the floor and do that, and especially do that in a way that can't even be challenged. That's what made last week even worse, is that was kind of the last word, and then everybody walked out. And that's what everybody's left away for the entire week, is that feeling. So then it makes you feel like when I'm reaching out, when I'm trying to make sure we know how each other feels, that it almost feels like it is in vain. And I know it's not in vain, because I know that's the right thing to do. But I just ask that not only that we don't do that to each other, but when we see folks of on our side of each aisle do that, let's also remind them that that's not what we do. Because that promise I can make you, if I've got folks that make those kind of comments, it doesn't mean they're going to listen to anything I say, but I at least will make my opinion known that that's not the appropriate way to act, and I would just ask the same on both sides. So thank you for that allowance, Mr. Speaker, but that was something we need to bring up. And thank you, Representative Dixon, for bringing that up, because that is important. We can't work in here if we start going after each other personally. We can't do it. So thank you.
I want to thank both Representative Dixon and Representative Reeves both for those comments. We, as you see, there's a state flag right there draped over Representative Bumgardner's seat. And for those who are here who aren't members, that's not just there for decoration. That's there because Representative Bumgardner passed away after a short but tough fight with cancer a few days ago. And Dana was one of my close friends here, very close with many folks in this house. And he was the kind of guy that didn't see you as Republican or Democrat or anything else. He just saw you as a person. He saw you as a fellow American and somebody who was taking your time to be here to serve your citizens back home. I do think, and I know there'll be others who will speak today on points of personal privilege in honor and of Representative Bumgardner. There'll be more formal moments where we formally recognize him and his family in the coming weeks. But it just seemed like an appropriate time with where we are right now to mention that. Number one, that whenever we see a passing, of course, Representative Carter passed away not that long ago now. Now Representative Bumgardner, it puts a lot of this in perspective. And there, every one of you who are here are taking time away from your families, from folks, from loved ones, from things, to be here, time that you will never get back. And you're doing it because you love this state, you care about the people of this state, and you want to see what's best. We have bills today, we have bills yet to come, where we are going to have differences of opinion, sometimes strong differences of opinion. But I think the recognition that we can all have disagreements without being disagreeable, that we can all have a very strong and fierce debate without making it personal, is something that's well said. And perhaps it's the late year, the fact that we're still here in October. We would have liked to have been out of here by July. And just the workload. But I would encourage my colleagues to keep that in mind and to just, it's real simple, the golden rule. Treat everybody else the way you want to be treated. And I would say I generally see that, but sometimes we do have some tempers that flare up. But as a wise man once said, measure twice and cut once on those words. That would be my word. And if I don't say it enough, I want each and every one of you to know that I appreciate you not only as a representative but as a person, and thank you for what you do every day to be here for the citizens of North Carolina. So with that, let's get on with the rest of our business. House Bill 761, the clerk will read.
Representatives Blackwell, Faircloth, Bowles, and McNeil. House Bill 761, a bill entitled Police Vehicle and Equipment Protection Act. Joseph North Carolina next.
The gentleman from Moore, Representative Bowles, is recognized for motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Make a motion to concur with House Bill 761. There are a couple technical changes, and I just hope we get a vote to concur.
The gentleman has moved that the House do concur with the Senate Committee substitute to House Bill 761. Further discussion, further debate. Not the question for the House is the motion to concur with the Senate Committee substitute to House Bill 761. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Representative Wheatley wish to record? Representative Reeves, Representative Daw, Representative Robertson wish to vote? The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 96, having voted in the affirmative, 15 in the negative. The House does concur with the Senate committee substitute to House Bill 761. The bill is ordered and rolled, sent to the governor. House Bill 851, the clerk will read. H-54.
Representatives Hollister, Zoka, Bradford, and Richardson, House Bill 854, bill to be entitled Act to provide reform of local government zoning authority and to increase housing authorities and to make various changes and clarifications to the zoning statutes. General Assembly of North Carolina acts.
Chairman from Guilford, Representative Hardister is recognized for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House concur with the Senate committee substitute for House Bill 854.
Representative Hardister has moved that the House concur with the Senate committee substitute to House Bill 854, and the gentleman has the floor to debate the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, this bill passed the House, and the Senate made some changes to it. The bill now focuses on land use clarifications. There are four sections in the bill. It's not controversial. This is primarily technical. The language is consensus. It was negotiated by the home builders as well as the League of Municipalities. It passed the Senate on a unanimous vote. Not aware of any opposition. Appreciate your support.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the is the adoption of the motion to concur with the Senate committee substitute to House Bill 854. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 111 having voted in the affirmative and none in the negative. The House does concur with the Senate committee substitute to House Bill 854. Bill is ordered and rolled and sent to the governor. House Bill 951, the clerk will read.
Representatives Arp, Zoka, Destenhall, and Bell, House Bill 951, a bill to be entitled Energy Solutions for North Carolina, General Assembly of North Carolina acts.
Gentleman from Union, Representative Arp is recognized for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Make a motion to concur with House Bill 951, Senate Committee Substitute.
Gentleman from Union, Representative Arp, has made a motion that the House do concur with the Senate Committee Substitute to House Bill 951, and the gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to try and be brief. I mean, our caucus, I know your caucus has debated this greatly. What I want to do is highlight some of the changes in this version that came back over from the Senate. In a sense, what the House version did was mandate certain energy amounts in terms of prescribes or carve-outs. Coming back from the Senate, what this does is it sets a 70% reduction in carbon emissions by the year 2030 with zero goal by 2050. And instead of having mandates for certain energy sources, both solar, gas, nuclear, whatever, instead what it does is put to the commission the choice for those energy sources and mandates that it must be done in the least cost mechanism, which is historically used by the commission, as well as maintain the reliability aspects, which is an objective measurable goal as well. In addition, this version maintains the option, should the commission choose to utilize a performance-based rate making, which the House has seen. There's been a few changes that I think had been raised about concerns about the commission being able to modify that plan. They can now do that under this version. And then lastly, the securitization aspect that was in ours was simplified. It references a previous securitization and allows securitization up to 50%. And then finally, one thing I would speak to is the decommissioning. DEQ will set the decommissioning guidelines for renewable panels and so forth, and make sure you have the adequate financial resources to decommission these at end of life. With that, I know you guys had a full debate. We've had a full debate, and I'll stand for any questions. But I urge your support.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Cabarrus, Representative Pittman Rice,
speak on the bill?
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The title of this bill is All I Need to Know to Oppose It. To achieve a 70% reduction in emissions of carbon dioxide is, in my view, a foolish and unjustifiable goal, unworthy of all the effort that has gone into this proposed legislation. I can understand wanting to address air pollution, but CO2 is not pollution. It is a necessary part of our atmosphere, as plant life depends on CO2, and animal life, including humans, depends on the process of plants returning oxygen for us to breathe in from the CO2 that we breathe out. If we eliminated or severely reduced the amount of CO2 in the air, that would be detrimental to plant life, thus reducing the supply of food and oxygen for us. A ninth grade general science education should be enough for us to understand that. All this hysteria about the production of CO2 and the supposed need to reduce it is nothing more than a not-so-well-hidden agenda of government control of the people and our lives. The very idea of anthropogenic climate change is a farce and a fraud. Our climate runs through cycles of warming and cooling that are caused by our planet's varying relationship to the sun and sunspots, quite independent of our presence and activity or our absence. My friend Bill Randall, who served in the U.S. Navy as a meteorologist, has told me in no uncertain terms that the amount of CO2 in our atmosphere, even after we have been so long in the industrial age, is so small a percentage of our atmosphere that it could not possibly cause the changes in our climate that are caused by our varying distance from the sun and the increase or decrease in sunspot activity. The effort to affect our climate by reducing carbon emissions is simply a useless endeavor to solve an imaginary problem contrived by would-be socialist totalitarians. This bill presents a financial, or excuse me, sorry, hard to read at this distance. This bill presents a farcical notion of stakeholder input, but it presses on to ignore the input of scientists, manufacturing firms, and other citizens who do not agree with its foundational premises and presumptions. We're told that the manufacturing community are on board with this bill. Yet, I have heard nothing but warnings from such businesses of the harm this legislation would do to their ability to afford to do business and the extra burden it would put on our citizens trying to pay their home energy bills. Just yesterday, I had three people come to my office representing a number of manufacturing companies, virtually begging me to help kill this bill, which I was already eager to do. While this bill no longer necessarily mandates solar energy, that change has been made, it would leave the option open for the Utilities Commission to favor solar over traditional forms of energy. There is talk of solar power being more efficient and lower cost than coal, natural gas, or other forms. That is not credible, especially in view of the damage that is done already to our agricultural economy by converting croplands and clear-cutting forest to put up solar panel fields and the problem of decommissioning and disposal of the worn-out components. How all of this is environmentally friendly escapes me, and solar panels will never replace coal, natural gas, nuclear, or hydroelectric power for efficient, round-the-clock energy. Besides all that, we need to learn a lesson from the disastrous blackout in Texas this year that resulted from their misguided dependence on solar and wind power. Solar and wind simply cannot replace the real thing in a dependable manner. Since so many pages of technical mumbo-jumbo were likely written by Duke Energy lawyers and lobbyists, there is effectively little possibility that all of this backroom dealing will result in lower costs for North Carolina ratepayers and taxpayers. Where are the independent studies critically examining the implications of these provisions? Who is truly representing the public here? This bill is unscientific, contrary to the interests of the majority of our citizens and businesses, and not likely to succeed in its goals, and is largely inconsistent with the professed positions stated in the North Carolina Republican Party platform. And I really don't see how Republicans can vote for it. The bill says that DEQ shall develop a plan to ensure adequate financial resources for the decommissioning of utility-scale solar projects. Yes, there should be statewide predetermined plans to decommission both wind and solar projects if we are foolish enough to follow this course, as these are both problems and expensive. They are expensive efforts. Under no circumstances should these costs be on the backs of North Carolina taxpayers and ratepayers. Instead, the full cost of such plans should be 100% borne by the entrepreneurs who are profiting from these lucrative products. This bill is remiss in not specifically requiring that, and is thus, I believe, a betrayal of our hardworking taxpaying citizens. The bill also endorses both solar and wind power while claiming to promote reliable and affordable energy. The reality is that those so-called renewables have zero scientific proof that they reduce CO2 by any consequential amount. Promoting them makes no scientific sense, but only capitulates to a leftist agenda. I refuse to be complicit in doing that. We should instead repeal Senate Bill 3 from 2007, which I have tried to do. This bill is simply some of the best hogwash money can buy. Please vote no.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Catawba, Representative Adams, rise?
To debate the bill. The
gentleman has the floor.
Well, I'm a Republican, and I'm going to vote for this bill. Now, it's not my wheelhouse. So I had to talk with some people back home. I come from Catawba County, and we are very much a manufacturing town, county, and we have been historically. I say that it's manufacturing is in our DNA. So I called Scott Millar, who is our EDC president, and had a long conversation with him yesterday about this. We just secured one of the largest manufacturing expansions that we've ever had in Catawba County. And one of the things you have to have in manufacturing, you have to have abundant energy, you have to have reliable energy, and you have to have relatively inexpensive energy. And we talked about this bill, and we talked about the industries that are populated in our county. And Scott said to me, vote for the bill with good conscience. If anybody gives you a hard time about it, I will stand up on the table and defend you. Vote for the bill. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Duplin, Representative Dixon, rise?
To debate the bill. The
gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Let me begin by saying that I may be unique in this current body that's in here. I remember the day that we got electricity in Granny's house. I was 4 years old. We had two light bulbs. And she better not catch both of them on at the same time. My grandmother invented the remote control. There was one light bulb in her bedroom, and she took a string of used tobacco twine and tied it to the little chain and ran it to her bedpost, so she could remotely control turning the lights on and off. Ladies and gentlemen, the cooperatives are very important to my part of the country. That electricity that I talked about came from what is now Tri-County Electric Membership Corporation. The gentleman that my grandmother was a tenant farmer for, Mr. Lewis Outla, was the inspiration behind developing that cooperative, and it's still successful today. I've talked with the cooperatives, and they support this bill in this current condition. I've spoken with many of our agricultural leaders, especially the large processing places that use enormous amounts of electricity in their feed mills, in their processing plants, and so forth. And they are in support of this bill. There's one thing that I'm absolutely sure of, and that's true of everyone in this room and everybody across the state of North Carolina. We are absolutely incredulous when we flip that switch and it don't come on. And we want it fixed now. It's been my experience with the major utilities over the past hurricanes and stuff, in my opinion, they have done a fantastic job of restoring our current. It is a necessity to life, and as the colloquialism or whatever you want to call it that we all say at one time or other, is this a perfect bill? No, because there never is one. But I think this is certainly a bill that everyone can vote and have a good conscience about it. I suggest that we vote yes on this bill. Thank you.
For what purpose does the lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Belcrest?
To briefly debate the bill.
Lady has the floor.
I don't know if a lot of you know this, but I am from Mecklenburg County, from Charlotte. As a matter of fact, my neighbor came out to chat. He is an executive with Duke Energy, and it was lovely to talk with him. And I applaud everyone who has worked diligently to work on this bill, to come to a compromise. I applaud the governor, the Senate, and the House getting together. And I would love to vote for this bill. But in the final analysis, I have to decide for my ratepayers and some of the people in my district who can not worry about how much their energy costs, but for those people who cannot. And I know that if we go to a multi-year plan, that is what's going to happen. And it will increase the rates, and I can't do that in good conscience. I applaud the hard work, and I understand why most people are going to vote for this, but I just cannot do it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the lady from Durham, Representative Morey, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to speak on the bill.
The lady has the floor.
This is a hard vote. I know our caucus had a long discussion and good points on both sides, and I'm sure the Republicans have the same concerns about some of the parts of the bill. What I wish is we weren't rushing into this, that it had gone to our Energy Committee, that we had more information about some of the points. And I have just three basic concerns. I do like what we have in Part 1 about the carbon reduction. I think we are in a climate crisis. I think science has proven it. And we should have these goals to reduce the carbon. And to go down 70% by 2030, I think, is admirable. But I think it's aspirational. And I'm worried on page 1 in this bill, lines 32 through 34, that this carbon plan, even though it's set out, can be totally neutralized and ignored by every 2 years, adjusted as necessary in the determination by the commission and the electric public utility companies. So I'm worried about that. I think that takes all the teeth out of the aspirational reduction of the carbon. The second issue, and I think Representative Belk said it very well, it's a 3-year incremental rate increase. This year we've already authorized, I believe it's 5.3%. Under this plan, the second year we can go up to another 4% increase, and the third year we could go another 4% increase. That would be 13.3% increase in utility bills in the next 3 years. Compared to now, every year we have to go back to the Utility Commission and ask for an adjustment or an increase, and it's not this 3 year, which I think will increase our rates much more. And then finally, for the low income, the moderate income, I know there is a loan forgiveness program, but the truth is it really doesn't help people, especially renters who are low income. 60% from one of the programs of these people are already denied. It is a, there are a lot of good things in the bill. I appreciate the very hard work of the House members that are the primary sponsors, but I wish we could improve it and not just rely on technical changes as we've been promised if this bill passes. It is a tough bill to vote on, and I know we all on both sides of the aisle see it very differently, but for those reasons, I think more work needs to be done, and I wish we could pull it and work on it a little bit more, but the three factors, I think, are big concerns. I would have to not support the bill. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Orange, Representative Meyer, rise?
To debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, I haven't made up my mind on this bill until a second ago. Maybe I'll change my mind again before it comes time to vote. But I want to say this. I think that when Representatives Arp and Zoka and Hall and the members of the majority staff started working on this legislation and sat down with us on the minority side and started to have conversations about what could be possible in energy legislation, it was some of the most exciting conversations that I've had as a legislator. Because we were talking about big ideas that will impact every single resident of the state for a long time to come. And we didn't agree on everything, but we talked about some possibilities of things that we found we had more agreement across party lines than we had previously considered. The one thing that I think everybody probably agrees on is we don't want people to have to pay any more than they have to for their cost of their bills. And I think that the concerns raised by Representative Morey and Representative Belk are legitimate and ones that we should all continue to be mindful of if this bill does become law. We as a body in this bill are giving additional authority and autonomy to the Public Utilities Commission because even though we tried to sit down and figure out more detailed answers that would be put into statute, we couldn't do it. And so we're shifting the responsibility to meeting these goals over to the Utilities Commission. I honestly think that's a failure, but in a way you can say that it's a success because at least we agreed enough to say we're going to put a process in place. And that, I think, is why I'll end up voting for the bill, because it sets a goal that I think is so critically important. And I appreciate those members of the Republican Party who haven't been very vocal in support of major climate change legislation for being willing to vote in for this bill if you're going to do so today. What I ask is that if and when this becomes enacted in the law and it shifts the responsibility for what happens next to the Utilities Commission, that we maintain that commitment to impacting the long-term climate health of our state and our world, and we maintain the commitment to trying to do so in a way that doesn't cost our residents more than what they should have to pay and more than what they can afford to pay for power. If we can keep those two fundamental agreements that are in this bill, then even though we've given a lot of our authority away, we've put in place two important things that this state needs for its long-term future. And so I do share the concerns that maybe we won't live up to those commitments that some of my colleagues have said, and I call on all of us to try and make sure that we do. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Autry, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to debate the bill. The
gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm a Pisces. And I don't put a lot of stock in astrology at all, except for moments like this. Do you know what the symbol for Pisces is? It's two fish swimming in opposite directions at the same time. And I feel so conflicted about the whole scope of this bill. But I want to support it because it was a compromise. I don't want to see somebody who can't compromise on a bill. It makes such significant changes to our energy policy in this state, a lot of it in a positive direction. I wish there weren't the loopholes that are in there. I wish we could take the time to fix those before we had to take this vote. I, too, will not know how I'm going to vote on this until the speaker calls for the vote. And I'll try not to hold that up any longer, but I do appreciate all the effort that has gone into this, because I think if we are not addressing the most critical, perilous situation that we face as a society in a holistic manner, then we certainly are not standing true to our oath of office. So thank you for letting me speak my mind on this, but I wish we were in a different place than where we are, but folks, here we are. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the adoption of the motion to concur with the Senate Committee substitute to House Bill 951. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 90 having voted in the affirmative and 20 in the negative. The House does concur with the Senate committee substitute to House Bill 951. The bill is ordered enrolled and sent to the governor by a special messenger. In fact, Mr. Clerk, members, the chair directs that all bills that were being sent to the governor today be sent to the governor by a special messenger. For what purpose does the lady from Wake, Representative Gill, rise?
I would like to change my vote on House Bill 761 to a yes.
Representative Gill will be recorded as having voted aye on the motion to concur with the Senate Committee substitute to House Bill 761. Members, we have concluded our business for the day, and we're going to go to notices and announcements at this time. And for your planning purposes, the next day that we will have votes will be Tuesday of next week. I know there's a conference about waterways and about flooding that's happening on Wednesday in Greenville, and I know a number of members of this body wanted to attend that. Those members who are not aware of what I'm talking about can see either my staff over here, I think Trafton Dinwiddie right there, who's raising his arm, he can give you the details. But for those who are very interested in the issues of flooding that unfortunately our state has seen, And I think, frankly, approaching it from a multifaceted view, may be interested. There is this conference that's going to be on Wednesday morning, commencing at 9 a.m., and it'll be in Greenville, and it talks about it'll be a subject matter for a lot of folks. So any members who'd like to attend that, please let Mr. Dinwiddie know, and we'll make sure to get you the details on that. For what purpose does the gentleman from Person, Representative Yarbrough, rise?
For an announcement, Wildlife Resources Committee members, we will be having a meeting 15 minutes after session. We've got two relatively simple bills, and so I hope to get out as quickly as possible. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Orange, Representative Meyer, rise?
Inquiry of the chair.
Chairman's recognized.
Mr. Speaker, I guess I'm looking for a little more clarity on what you're saying. So you're saying there will be recorded votes on Tuesday, probably not on Wednesday. What about Thursday?
The recorded votes will be on Tuesday. The conference is on Wednesday. If I misspoke, you said the conference is Wednesday. That's why we set the votes for Tuesday. If I misspoke, I apologize.
That part I understood. I guess I'm asking about Thursday, Mr. Speaker.
At this point, Thursday, I don't think we're going to need any votes Thursday. If so, we'll be able to advise that on Tuesday, but my intention would be for us to be able to dispose of our business on Tuesday of next week. So, frankly, a lot of the time right now is being spent on the budget negotiations. So, we did have a few bills to move around, but that's the bulk of what we're doing right now. For what purpose the lady from Wake, Representative Ball, rise?
Question of the speaker.
Lady's recognized.
Thank you. Do you have any idea, I'm sure you do, what time we will be in session for votes on Tuesday? Will it be morning, afternoon?
Looking at, right now at this point, we're looking at an 11 a.m. session for Tuesday. There is a possibility that it would be, I'm just looking at the calendar, It looks like it's going to be more than likely 11 a.m. If that changes, we'll let everyone know. But that's the plan at this point. The House will come to order. Gentleman from Stokes, Representative Hall, is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege as well as to advise the body on the arrangements for Representative Bumgarner. Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Dan Bumgarner was my roommate here in Raleigh, and this is a very tough speech to give about his passing. I was actually on my way to visit him on Saturday before he passed away and didn't make it in time. Whenever we do the memorial for him, I'll share some more funny stories because honestly, I've got to filter my Dana stories to make sure that they're PG. And, you know, with Dana, anytime he said, well, you knew something was getting ready to happen. And there's a lot of stories I could tell about Dana. He loved this state. He loved Gaston County. He was very committed to the people there. He always used to tell me that he knocked on 5,000 doors to get down here, and he was right. He outworked all of his opponents every time he had an election, and he loved art. I mean, he was a very cultured man, believe it or not, and that gruff exterior that he had, he loved art, he loved culture, he loved food, he loved traveling. He was a wine connoisseur. He had 500 bottles of wine at his house. I mean, that was his hobby, was collecting wines and collecting the best wines. And every week, Dana would bring several bottles of wine, to the apartment. And those were the best wines I've ever had in my life. And, he loved wine. More importantly, he loved his family. He loved Cindy, his wife, his daughter Lauren, his son Austin, and more important than any of them, he loved his grandchildren. And, it's going to be sad not being with him this Saturday in Gastonia from 10 to 11:45 will be his visitation. And then at 12 o'clock, John Sauls will actually be officiating his funeral. And I know that was Dana's wishes for John to do that. John and Dana and I actually traveled to the Grand Canyon together. And so I'll cherish that memory forever. But just keep his wife and his kids and grandkids in your prayers during this very difficult time. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative Hall. For what purpose does the gentleman from Randolph, Representative McNeil, rise?
Well, I honestly say that's tough to stand up after that and speak, but point of personal privilege.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you. Many of you know that I had hip replacement surgery on September the 14th, a little over 3 weeks ago. I've been out since then. I want to thank the flowers that were sent during my recovery. I want to personally thank those that called, those that texted, and those that sent cards. It's good to be back. I'm recovering, getting a little bit better each and every day. Thank you, and it's good to be back with you.
Representative McNeil, it is good to see you back. Glad you're doing well. And I want to join all our colleagues to join. Please join me in welcoming Representative McNeil back with us today. Thank you. For what purpose does the gentleman from Gaston, Representative Hastings, rise?
Just a brief moment of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
So I guess a lot has been said about Representative Bumgardner, and there are a few things that I wanted to mention about Dana and his family. His wife, Cindy, continued to keep us updated as Dana progressed and then got worse. And a lot of the people around the community took food to Dana's family, and he was so appreciative. There were a couple of things that I wanted to mention about Dana just quickly. One is he was so proud that within the last year, he started self-defense classes. And every so often, Dana would come up to me and show me a new move, and that was pretty interesting. But he really enjoyed getting into self-defense. That's one thing that he talked about a lot in his final days. The other thing that I have to mention about Dana, other than being a family man, a Christian, a great father, brother, he's got a lot of family in Gaston County. He always mentioned to me that he had family buried in Kayser, North Carolina, which is in Upper Cleveland County. And he was very proud of that. And of course, he grew up in the Bessemer City area, which is also in the district I represent. And then the final thing I wanted to say about Dana is how astute and intelligent he was. He was an avid reader, as you well know. I mean, he could tell you things about history that I certainly couldn't express to anybody. And there was one other thing about Dana that you need to know. He became, although he didn't really serve as a chair of the committee, but he became an expert at transportation. And after we moved out of the old equity formula and into the new law, STI, Dana got into the weeds with us. He knew exactly how to get a project prioritized. He knew what would happen if a project didn't score well and cascaded to a lower level. He knew about the prioritization points that the division engineer could grant, or the RPO or the MPO. He became an expert at transportation. And one of the last texts I got from Dana, believe it or not, within the last 2 weeks, had to do with transportation. There was a major decision about a project on a fiscally constrained list, and actually it was over in Charlotte, and Dana texted about that. He knew what was going on with a fiscally constrained project on a list in Charlotte within the last 2 weeks of his last breath. And that told me a lot about him. And then the final thing I'll say is Cindy called and said, Kelly, if you're going to come see Dana, you probably need to come pretty quickly. We're calling in hospice. I think that was on a Saturday, Kyle, if I'm not mistaken. My wife and I got in the car. We went down there. Anika didn't go in because, COVID and other things. We just felt better. And so I'll just go ahead and be honest with everybody. I'm 60 years old, but that's the first time that I experienced someone very close to their last breath. And I didn't know it. I thought it was a medicine-induced stupor. But come to find out it wasn't. And Dana, I'll be vivid for you. When Cindy would mention that someone was beside him, he would use every ounce of energy he had to open an eye. And if you spoke to him, and I think Pastor Saul's told me this, hearing is one of the last things to go. If you spoke to him, he would try to mumble back to you. And boy, that brought tears to my eyes when I saw Dana do that. So I won't go on anymore other than to say it'll be an honor to pay tribute to him on Saturday. And it's an honor and privilege to be able to be in this body and take personal privilege to speak about such an honorable man. And thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hastings. For what purpose does the gentleman from Duplin, Representative Dixon, rise?
Point of privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, members. Dana Bumgardner is a good man. I offer that as encouragement for all of us, and I understand when we speak about our loved ones and we use the past tense, Dana was. I've made it a practice to say, Dana is, so-and-so is. Because, yes, death is a transition. A wise man made this statement that I refer to often, that in the gospel of Jesus Christ, death is a comma, not a period. Therefore, I say, Dana Baumgartner is a good man.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Chatham, Representative Reeves, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Point of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
I would just say that I obviously echo a lot of sentiments that we've already heard about Representative Baumgartner. I would just felt compelled to say something just because when I first got here, those of you that were here, you don't remember a lot of times. John and Hardison and I were talking about this the other day. I actually got appointed midterm. And so I came in and we'd already finished the long session. And so the short session was getting started up. And so the first person I met, first Republican person I met was Mike Hager. Met him down in the cafeteria, and that was a interesting, fun time. Mike is really funny for those that remember Mike. And then second person that I actually got a chance to talk to was a speaker. The speaker and I were over at the Capitol building. And he came up and I was so out of politics, I didn't even realize he was still here, but we were in college together and we share a very close friend. But third person was Dana. And Dana was in transportation. And I think that's why it was so good you brought that up, Representative Hastings. And so for 8 years, Dana has been my constant in the sense of I always see him under the building in the garage. And out of everybody here, all of us that we've taught and things, never talked to Dana about a bill. It was just always something funny. And I would love to be able to recount it now. I can't, but I mean, it's just every time I saw Dana when we were outside this building, I just smiled because he always had something because Dana was his own person. And that's what I loved about him. It didn't matter who was telling him what he needed to do voting, who was telling him what he needed to do on a bill or something. He literally made up in his mind who and what he was going to be about what he was doing and just kept on going and was never unpleasant. I wasn't in caucus. I'm going to assume I'm right. But it was just always, he was never unpleasant, never cantankerous. He just had an opinion and immediately jumped off that opinion and would start talking to you about his family or something else. And that was just who he was. And that's why I'm going to miss him, because I think all of us could take something from that, because literally to think for 8 years to serve with somebody and never once talk about anything except each other, that was really nice. And it's nice when you get up here, however briefly, to find somebody that makes you smile and makes you happy. And really, when they ask about how you're doing, sincerely cares how you're doing. And that was Dana. And I'm really going to miss that. He had some really close relationships in our caucus. And it's just, it's really tough when you see this happen. I mean, it's been a tough year all around, but I mean, he was one of those people that I just never thought of being in this building, and Dana not being downstairs in the garage, walking to his car and having something funny to tell me. So thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Sir, thank you, Representative Reeves. And I certainly appreciate the comments many of you have made concerning Representative Baumgartner. And again, at a later date, we will do a resolution honoring his life and memory. And of course, his family will be there at that time. But do continue to remember his family in your thoughts and prayers in the coming days. Any further notices or announcements? For what purpose does the gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, rise?
For an announcement.
The gentleman has the floor.
Members, those of you who are on the House Redistricting Committee know this, but I want to make sure that those of you who are not on the committee know it, and that is that the House Redistricting Committee terminals will be open in room 643 each Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. You don't have to be a member of the Redistricting Committee to go in there and draw if you want to draw. There are four terminals that are in there, and the Representative Reeves and I have discussed this, ahead of time. He's got a terminal that's dedicated to him or whoever he may designate, and I've got a terminal designated to me and whoever I may designate. And then the other two are just simply open for any member any time. So I just want to make sure that everybody understands that you don't have to be on the House Redistricting Committee to come in and draw. You're free to come in there anytime during those periods. You can save your map. You don't have to draw through the whole thing at one time. You can save whatever portion you want to draw and then come back later whenever you get time or whenever the committee room opens back up. So again, that's room 643, the big committee room upstairs in the LOB, and it's going to be Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. You can go in there anytime that you want to. And we're going to maintain those hours at least for probably throughout the next week at least, and we'll see what kind of progress is made. And if it looks like folks are making a lot of progress and not a lot of folks are spending time in there trying to draw, we may start to limit some of those hours so that we don't have staff just sitting over there unnecessarily. If you have any questions about that, come see me.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Cabarrus, Representative Pittman, rise?
One personal privilege.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. When I heard this morning that Representative Kidwell would not be here because he had to take Vicky back to the doctor, I was concerned, afraid something was bad going on. So I contacted him. He said it was, a scheduled evaluation with the cardiologist, and she's getting a little better each day. The doctor report today was good, but said about 3 months to heal. So thank goodness it wasn't anything real bad today. So. But please continue to keep her in your prayers. Thank you.
Thank you for that update as well. Further discussion, further debate, further notices or announcements? Seeing none, the gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, is recognized for a motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House do now adjourn to reconvene Monday, October 11th at 3 p.m., subject to the standard stipulation set forth in Rule 15.1.
Gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, moves, seconded by Representative Jones, that the House do now adjourn to reconvene Monday, October 11th at 3 o'clock p.m., subject to the standard stipulations set forth in Rule 15.1. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The House stands adjourned.
A representative statement observing Pandas and Pan Awareness Day, whereas Pandas and Pans a seriously critical diagnosis illness, and whereas pandas is a sudden onset of obsessive compulsive disorder, often displayed as severe anxiety, emotional disturbances, in addition to or more of the following symptoms: tics or other abnormal movements, irritability, emotional lability, aggression, personality changes, ADHD, sensory sensitivities, deterioration of learning abilities and school performance, developmental and age regression, sleeping or nighttime difficulties, and or urinary frequency or daytime nightmare secondary emesis. And whereas PANS is similar to PANDAS in terms of presentation, but has a broader list of possibilities triggering, including psychoplasma, pneumonia, mono, Lyme viruses, and other infections, as well as non-infectious environmental and metabolic triggers. And working criteria is PANS of abrupt, dynamic onset of OCD, and severely restricted food intake, and concurrent presence with additional neuropsychiatric symptoms, and whereas children with PANDAS or PANS may have moderate to dramatic improvements with antibiotics within 1 week of treatment, or may require further intervention such as prolonged antibiotics and or intravenous immunoglobulin treatment of plasmas, mesophilosis, and whereas PANDAS, PANS are frequently diagnosed and undiagnosed and untreated due to the lack of awareness of these disorders, both by the public and medical community. And whereas researchers of National Institute of Mental Health are currently engaged in extensive research and testing of how effective to treat these disorders, and whereas while the true prevalence of pandas and pans is unknown, it is estimated that 1 in 200 children in the United States are impacted by these disorders. Pandas and pans can seriously affect health and outcomes of children's life, and funding and awareness is scarce. And whereas organizations such as Pandas Network and Pans Research and Advocacy Innovative are dedicated to advocating on behalf of the youth of pandas and pans by providing emotional and social support of families, raising community awareness, and investing in data-driven research. Now, therefore, it is fitting to observe October 9, 2021 as Pandas Pans Awareness Day to help others learn about these serious illnesses. In witness whereof, the unassigned certifies the foregoing statement was read in the House of Pleasantville Journal on the 7th day of October 2021, submitted by Representative John Bradford, James White, Principal Clerk. Noted.
Ratification of bills and resolutions. The clerk will read.
The enrolling clerk reports the following bills duly ratified for presentation to the governor. House Bill 624, an act to enact North Carolina Financial and Insurance Regulatory Sandbox Act and to establish North Carolina Innovation Council. House Bill 761, an act to increase the penalties for breaking and entering into certain law enforcement vehicles and for the theft of certain law enforcement equipment, to make technical corrections to State Law 2021-118 and to make a technical correction to Session Law 2021-123. House Bill 854, an act to provide reforms to local government zoning authority, increase housing opportunities, and to make various changes and clarifications to the zoning statutes. House Bill 951, an act to authorize Utilities Commission to take all reasonable steps to achieve a 70% reduction in emissions of carbon dioxide from electric public utilities from 2005 levels by the year 2030 and to carbon neutrality by the year 2050, to authorize performance-based regulation of electric public utilities, 3, proceed with rulemaking on secularization of certain costs and other matters, and 4, allow potential modifications of certain existing power purchase agreements within eligible small power producers.
Chapter bills will be noted. Representatives Adams and Yarber recognize and forth committee report. Clerk will read.
Representative Jay Adams, co-chair. Representative Larry Yarber, co-chair. Senate Bill 66, committee substitute number 1, regulate use of deer secretions for hunting. Favorable House committee sub, unfavorable Senate committee sub, and re-referred.
Senate committee substitutes placed on the unfavorable calendar. The House committee substitutes referred to the Committee on Rules calendar and operations of the House.
Senate Bill 233, committee substitute number 1, modify fox coyote taking for certain counties. Favorable House committee sub, unfavorable Senate committee sub, and re-referred.
Senate committee substitutes placed on the unfavorable calendar. The House committee substitutes referred to the Committee on Local Government.